Hello to you and welcome to the Jewellers Podcast. So it is 2018. Happy New Year. I'm here with Neil Pola. He's come back for 2018.
By popular demand.
By popular demand. To give his opinions on the year that was 2017. And also joining us is Diamond Dave, David Hollanders. How are you doing, Dave?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Yeah, nice to have you here.
Nice to be here.
Welcome to the studio. So technology. Dave, are you a technology fiend?
Over the last few years, I've tried to get up to date with it. Yeah. I've taken on CAD design and printing. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think that's I'm up with the with Rhino Gold. I like to use that program. I find that very useful.
Yeah.
Started that a few years ago, probably about 8 years ago, got onto that.
Sure. Yeah, because these things are not obviously exclusive to 2017. They've been going on for a long time, but I think 2017 proved that they're not going away anytime soon.
Oh, definitely not, no.
Yeah, and you've got these sort of two big technology parts of jewellery that being a jeweller has come through, lasers and 3D printing. And some people will embrace them and some people are not keen.
I think there's a big reluctance to embrace the new technology. It is so much of a change from making something from hand to actually designing it on a computer screen and actually having something else created for you. Having said that, once that's created, it's still cast in a traditional way that a hand-carved wax would be cast.
Sure.
And to be honest, my clients actually love the idea of seeing a rendered image, a photograph of what they're going to get before it's even made.
So
it eliminates that possible disappointment at the end. And I think as jewelers, over many years, there's always that surprise at the end. You just never know. There's always that heartbeat moment where you hand over the ring to a customer and they open it up and they say, "I love it."
Yeah.
And then that 1 in 100 says, "Oh."
I think we've all been there.
Yeah, right. But I guess it's like, it's kind of like the hand manufacturing, there's a romanticism about it, and the CAD design, some people are tech heads and they love that kind of, the sort of knowing sort of the behind the workings of it and stuff like that. So I guess it depends on your audience, depends on your customer, like
yes,
what they want.
Certainly, and actually to watch one of those machines in action, whether it be a 3D printer or a milling machine,
you
know, I could spend many hours just watching it with a box of popcorn.
Yeah, sure. It is quite distracting, isn't it?
Yes. But it certainly is different, and nobody is suggesting that one should replace the other.
Yeah,
there's always room for both, I think, and certainly it would be a shame if the industry went totally in the direction of CAD/CAM, away from handmade skills, because certainly one is improved by the other.
I think that in terms of 3D printing or milling, there's a something that not everybody would be aware of, but there's another technology coming onto market, essentially as we speak. You know, over the last year or two. Companies have been working on this technology, and I think we'll really see it actually make some inroads into the market in the next couple of years, is actually 3D printing in the metal.
Oh, I saw an article about that a couple of days ago, so it is very fresh, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think at this stage it's made zero inroads into the industry, perhaps at the level of the manufacturers of the equipment. It's starting to make some inroads, and there's certainly been a lot of R&D done on it. But I think that within the next 2 years, we're going to certainly see that coming into our industry more and more. And perhaps in another year or two time, the argument is going to be, what's better, printed in wax and then cast, or printed in the metal? Maybe that's going to be the primary argument, as opposed to handmade versus printed.
Well, in terms of its difference between that and 3D printing that is then cast. You have no waste, but you also have a vat of golden sand, which is going to...
You might have $500,000 worth of sand there. Yeah,
yeah, right.
Yeah, certainly there's a company in the UK that's developed this Cookson. And yeah. You can send your designs already to them and they'll cast it for you. Or not cast it for you, they'll print it for you. And all the designs I've seen so far have been cutting edge. They've been designs that would be too thin to cast.
Sure.
And so if you think of all the jewellery that's made through electroforming and things like that, this is sort of replacing that.
Wow, yeah. Because, yeah, exactly. You can do hollow designs and links and...
Certainly, yes. So the people that are using it now, I think, are trying to come up with something completely new, something that we've not seen before. So it's not wedding rings and engagement rings. It's more hollowware and things like that.
As yet.
Back
as
to yet, the future, yet, yes. Two kind of jewellery.
Yes, I'm sure if you spent $750,000 on a machine, you'd use it for everything. You wouldn't be too choosy on what you did.
Yes.
Yeah, right. And the laser as well. We talked a lot about the laser on the podcast. Hey, Neil.
Yes. I think I'm definitely a convert. I think that lasers are fantastic. I haven't purchased one as yet. I have had a play with a couple. And I have, when I've worked in Dave's workshop, I've actually used his Puck, which is, I guess, the slightly more cost-effective cousin of a laser, and found that to be extremely useful.
Is it like a dustbuster to a Hoover?
I would say it's a very distant cousin.
Very distant cousin.
but it's certainly such a step up from the torch to be able to use a welder. And then, obviously, a big step up again to a laser. So people that have moved to the laser, a lot of them have started with a welder, whether it be an Orion or a Puck welder, and then they've gone on to the laser.
Yeah.
But the investment of $20,000 for a laser, and that's the entry level, seems a lot, but once you get the machine, it actually blends into insignificance, really.
Yeah, well, I guess if you look at it over the course of a couple of years, I mean, $20,000, it's certainly a lot less than the cost of having another tradesman there to bind things up and solder them for you in position. So if you've got the work, it definitely works out to be a very good investment. And if you don't have that kind of volume of work, or you don't have the money ready to throw into a laser at this point, well, perhaps... investing in a welder of some description to start off with. A lot of the things that are achievable with a laser are achievable with a welder, a Puck or an Orion, and there's not a complete 100% overlap of what they'll do or the ease with which they'll do it, but it's very close. And I think until you've actually had a play with one, you don't realise how much time you can save yourself. And I really don't think that this is really about an argument as to if it's appropriate to use one or not. You can still be a complete hand fabricator and still use one of these machines. A number of very good hand fabricators in this trade use those. And essentially, it gives them the flexibility to tack something in place to hold it for soldering, or to tack something in place just to see what it looks like before they make that final decision.
And is there a progress beyond the laser? Is there an evolution yet to come?
I'm sure there is. I think it's very similar to, you get a handyman in to do a little bit of work in your house, and he's got the nails and the hammer, but the hammer never comes out of his bag, and out comes the nail gun, and he's done 50 nails in 2 minutes.
In
the time it would take me to knock half a dozen nails in, he's finished the job.
Certainly, I think automated lasers will become a thing in the future, more at first on the mass production side of things, but we may see a situation where we have complete automation of CAD designs, where you can actually design your CAD file and it's a three-piece casting, and when it gets back you clean it up to specs and then you put it in the automated welder and it welds it together for you.
Because you see that with every update of Rhino Gold, they actually have catalogues of sections. So you can just put in a section, poof, done. Well, yeah. So
I think the one thing I would say about the laser is that the joins are never, or very often the joins are not permanent joins.
Yeah.
I've got to be careful how I say that. I mean is you often find when jewellery that's made of components do fail, it's often the laser join wasn't adequate. That's not to say that laser joins aren't adequate, but you can get laser joints that aren't adequate. So often a good use of the laser join is to tack things in place and then solder them in a traditional way.
I think that part of that has to do with that welding is, in general, it's a new technology to us as jewelers.
Certainly.
And a lot of us don't have a background in welding steel or, you know, brazing metals and building up materials in a joint. So what we see a lot of is jewelers simply doing a butt joint where you've got the two materials butted up against each other. And then effectively the laser join is only as strong as the thickness of that one little
exactly,
join. Yes. I think that something that will come with time as perhaps as some courses are offered or some information online, maybe some jewelers will learn that, you know, you might be better off to chamfer the edges of your join and then do a fillet through there.
Certainly that's the way it's promoted to do that. Yeah. But it's not always in practice.
Absolutely. And I think if you do, as a general rule, if you go through the process of chamfering the edges of the join and doing a fillet through there, perhaps you might actually be better off soldering it in the first place.
Yeah, certainly.
Depending on application.
When I got the puck welder, one of the tutorials was to resize a 2mm shank, which required cutting a V right to the back end of the gold and then slowly filling it with gold wire and welding it in place. And there's a lot of extra work compared to a solder.
Yep.
A lot of extra work. And you also get a little bit of porosity using a welder in that way.
Yep.
So it's these machines aren't a do-all sort of machine.
That's the same with everything, isn't it? There's pros and there's cons, and it's finding the right
exactly
time.
Just like CAD,
yeah,
it's not going to replace handmade.
And I think that it's really, there's no one tool that's an answer to every one of our problems, and it's up to us as tradespeople to actually learn how to use those tools to the best effectiveness for us. So, while these machines may not be perfectly suitable for doing a straight out resize, they're most certainly perfectly suitable for tacking that band in position.
Yes. Yep.
So then you can take it to your soldering bench and solder it.
I think you've mentioned before putting a setting onto a shank.
Absolutely, yeah.
That can be the most frustrating thing. You've got a setting that you've made, you've got the shank. There's nothing more difficult than the simplest design.
Yeah.
Because a tenth of a millimeter out and it's going to look terrible.
Yeah.
So it takes a long time to set up, but with the welder, you just tack it in place. If it's not right, you untack it.
Yeah.
These aren't deep tacks, you can just tack them, and it's almost like using glue in a way.
Yeah.
You tack it together, you get it right, and then you solder it, and the whole process can be a few minutes, maybe 5 minutes, as opposed to maybe an hour.
Well, I think we've all had that situation where, you know, we've got a two-piece ring, we've got a setting and a shank, and you can hold it together in front of you and everything looks perfect and sits perfectly, but then when it comes time to bind it up with your binding wire and or hold it with your tweezers on your bench in order to solder it, you might spend, you know, 45 minutes, an hour trying to get it to sit just right. Or you might do it and then flow some solder on and find that it's moved the moment that the whole thing is heated up, and that
exactly.
You've got to then clean out the solder and reposition it and start again. And just the ability to tack that in place while you're holding it in place by hand and then come back and flow your solder in just makes such a huge difference to productivity.
Yeah. And your mental health as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Definitely.
2017, Dave, was a big year for stones and synthetics and imitations.
Yeah, we saw a real push with synthetic diamonds. I mean, they've been around for a while, but suddenly they're upon us and being marketed quite aggressively.
Yeah.
And is it going to be an interesting time to see how that pans out with the natural diamond industry?
Sure. Well, it's funny you should say there's been a big push for the synthetics, because it's almost as if the diamonds are just sort of sitting in the background. So there's not really, they're kind of keeping quiet this year.
Well, certainly you go back a few years and diamonds were marketed quite strongly, especially through De Beers.
Yeah.
But once De Beers left Australia, diamonds have really been, it's been left to the individual suppliers here.
Yeah.
We don't see too much from the big mines, like Argyle, for instance. They promote the pinks, but we don't see that really coming through into any television advertising or anything like that. So as soon as you get a company that says, okay, we're gonna push our brand, we're going to start selling our product, they're straight away in the public eye.
Yeah. Well, pinks were big.
Oh, they still are.
They still are.
They've become almost too big.
Are they like the property prices where they're just like everyone's expecting it to be a bubble soon and they're going to go down?
They certainly can be. I mean, I quoted $1,000 for one yesterday, but it was a one-pointer.
Wow.
Which is just an element in a design.
Yeah.
But obviously, once you start thinking about a central stone or even side stones of any size, you're into many, many thousands, or even hundreds of thousands once you start talking about carats.
Because what are they, the most concentrated?
The most concentrated form of wealth on the planet, I think I heard.
I think you told
described
me that.
As at one stage.
Yeah.
Perhaps actually it may be blues or greens currently that are, or maybe purples, but depending on what the current, you know, price per carat record holder is. But I think that the problem with natural fancy colours is that the price has, particularly for argyle source stones, has come to such a premium, and the supply demand equation is such that depending on where your market is, obviously, but you get this steady stream of people coming in saying that I only want the best, so I want an argyle pink diamond.
Yeah, yeah.
And they have in their mind that they have a budget of perhaps $50,000 for what they
I'd
want.
Love a steady stream of those customers.
Well, yeah, you'd love that, but the problem is that they have in their mind that, you know, they have a budget of $50,000 and this is what they really want because they want something that's really rare, and they think $50,000 is a lot of money. But when it comes to buying an argyle pink diamond, it gets you a small diamond.
That's
that
right.
Has probably got, you know, is probably SI2 at the best clarity. And that's not necessarily what people that are spending that kind of money actually want. So I do think that it creates some confusion in the market. And I do think that for perhaps for jewelers that have quite a lot of middle class clientele, who don't necessarily, you know, they're aspirational, they want what they perceive as the best on the market, but they still don't have the deep enough pockets to go buying, you know, half carat, one carat natural pinks that are VS clarity.
Yeah. I mean, go back 100 years and there wasn't too many one carat diamonds being sold.
No, there wasn't.
It was beyond the realm of the average person. And if you look at a lot of engagement rings from people of I would say, normal means, the engagement ring diamonds are often around a quarter of a carat, something like that.
Well, I guess if you go back 100 years, though, I mean, diamonds were not necessarily the most popular stone to have in an engagement ring either.
I don't think many people turned them down.
No.
I think there was definitely, it's in the latter part of the 20th century they become a so much more affordable.
Yes.
But are they still top trumps? Because they're up the top of the old moors, aren't they?
Yeah, I think so. I don't see anything eclipsing a diamond.
I think in
jewelry.
Terms of desirability, they're certainly at the top of the list.
Oh, you think still?
Yeah.
I'm saying generally. Well, I'm not talking about everybody. There's a lot of people that prefer other stones.
In terms of durability and practical application, practical elements of it, diamond is the best.
I would say in my business, one of the most pleasing things is when somebody brings in grandmother's engagement ring and we take away the old gold that's worn out because it was worn every day for 60 years, 70 years, and the diamond is as fresh now as it was the day it was put into her ring.
Sure.
And we're able to then make a new ring for the granddaughter. It might be her engagement ring. She may go on and wear that for another 60 or 70 years. There's not that many things that you can spend your money on that will actually put up with being worn every day and be around in 5 years' time, let alone 50 or 60 years' time.
Yeah.
So it's certainly, I know a lot of people say jewelry isn't an investment, but as far as the emotional side of it goes,
yeah,
I think jewelry is a huge investment.
Well, I mean, that's how I feel about gold and diamonds, is that they're always there. Like, you know, I was going to talk about gold price because Bitcoin was a big story in 2017, but gold is always going to be there in the background. All these sort of fancy other things can come up as an investment, but it's just omnipresent.
It's interesting. I mean, nothing's come anywhere near gold in the last probably 50 years as far as, or 100 years as far as investment goes, until Bitcoin. And, you know, there's not many people that can really, apart from saying it's a cryptocurrency, there's not many people can say what it is. What does one look like?
I don't think there's many people can actually tell you, give you a straight answer in two sentences or less on how to go and buy one and how to go and sell one either.
That's another.
But
another
one
story.
One thing that's very that's come out of all this is the way that it's traded. It's traded being able to be it's traceable.
Yes.
Each trade is traceable.
So, and you're
the technology.
About blockchain.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the technology is being taken up by the banks. The banks want this technology to be able to do transactions instantly. So when you don't have to wait 3 days for your money, they're using this technology that Bitcoin has championed.
Mm-hmm.
And also now we just heard that one of the leading European gem laboratories is partnering with Everledger, which is one of the is an expert in this.
Yep, yep.
And they want to be able to trace gemstones from the mine, from the original miner, from the mine, all the way through to the consumer. And this will be a game changer as far as gemstones go.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's what everyone's always wanted, isn't it? Like, mine to market, well, accountability.
There's so many stories and fear campaigns about how miners are treated and child labour and these sort of things, which I'm sure just go on. But who knows the whole story? And by doing something like this, just like it did with the coffee industry, and you start to get some sort of transparency. You get the transparency.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, where does this coffee come from? And then people have a choice. Okay, I can choose the stone from this source because I know where it's come from, or I can choose this one, might be a little bit cheaper.
Yeah.
But I don't know anything about it.
So that's huge.
It is.
Being able to use blockchain technology.
That's right.
In 2018, where we're now.
We're yet to see how it would, go. But it's only just been announced, literally yesterday, 9th of January.
Yeah, right.
I read an article, I think, about 18 months ago, that there was a company that was partnering up with a blockchain specialist about doing this with diamonds. So specifically because I had a customer ask me. And obviously it hadn't gone anywhere in the last 18 months if there's just been a...
This was gemstones.
Okay.
This is a gem lab, so not a diamond lab.
But what I'm going to say is that I think that it's huge from a marketing perspective and in terms of generating business. From an ethical perspective, is it going to make any difference? Probably not. I think we've all seen it before where we're told that, you know, this is a diamond from or a gemstone from an ethical source. And we just believe it. We believe these statements. And then sometimes you find out later on that, well, one person's version of an ethical source is not necessarily another person's version.
I think the thing about this, though, because of the transparency, you'll get independent reporters who say, well, hang on a minute, this gemstone comes from this mine and we've got evidence that this mine isn't doing the right thing.
Perhaps.
And I think that will embarrass and it will change the market.
Perhaps, but it does require those reporters to actually have access to the mine and to workers.
And I think that will probably be part of the system. Okay. You can't have accountability without transparency. You can't just give your own account without somebody checking it. And I think
that's interesting, yeah.
For a big European laboratory like this, if it did that and it was flawed, it would just fall in a heap.
Yeah.
I think this has the potential, if it's done properly, and I'm sure it will be, to be a game changer.
So this kind of leads me onto a discussion that you and I had this morning. Dave and I actually travelled in today and had our own little podcast on the way here.
And it was much better than this one.
We didn't
but
have...
you need me to record.
Of course, yes. We didn't... when I say it was much better, what I mean was it was more. It was probably a little bit more risque.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
But we didn't have Lindsay to keep us on track.
To tempt you, yeah.
And I guess, you know, we were discussing, and I'm going to say that I threw this out there that... I've heard a couple of scenarios in the past of you know, perhaps a jeweler or a diamond merchant purchasing a secondhand diamond ring, taking the diamond out and having it recertified and then selling it on the market. And I guess that in itself is not an issue, but the discussion that we were having was regarding the ethics of whether that is then a secondhand diamond or whether it is a brand new diamond. Whether it's a raw material that's not affected by how many times it's been sold used, or whether it is actually a finished product in itself and therefore should be sold as secondhand. So I can imagine if you have blockchain accountability on a diamond, then that... In that particular instance, that diamond then either A, has to go into the grey market, has to come out of the blockchain accountability system, be sold without a reference back to where it originally came from, or perhaps then it has to be that it is then secondhand. If there is some sort of mine to cutter to consumer.
Yeah. But then also I've got an antique diamond ring. And I often wonder what the story is.
I'm not saying it's a problem. I love the idea of reusing something.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is it might enhance the diamond if you've got sort of a genealogy.com ability to look at its past.
Potentially. I mean, perhaps if it belonged to somebody famous.
True.
But if it just belonged to, you know, Betty Smith from down the street who, you know, and the reason why it's on the market is that she you know, had a divorce or died or whatever, then perhaps that there are clients out there, potential consumers, who would not want to purchase that item.
Right. And also, that's true as well. Like, I look at mine and I like to think that it came from the Titanic or, you know, some queen somewhere. And
You should have locked Jack on that door with you.
I over romanticize what the story of these diamonds could have been. So, and that's part of what I enjoy about looking at them. So maybe
I think you're the ideal consumer. If you went in the trade, I'd try and sell you a diamond right now.
But whereas if you know the history, maybe you are sort of taking a quality away from
I think I quite like the idea that you can trace something.
Yep.
And everything will have a market. And there will be somebody who wants that diamond that's got a little bit of history, and maybe it'll be a little bit cheaper, or maybe the history will enhance the price.
Yeah, but like a famous person's house on the market.
Yeah,
or
the house where there was a multiple murder. There's still a market for that. You know, it's smaller market, thank goodness.
Yeah.
But I think the idea of transparency in all things, whether it be diamonds or everything we do, I think is only a good thing.
Yeah.
I guess that there may be some unforeseen consequences of this in a hypothetical situation where every single diamond that is sold onto the market has this ability to trace it back to where it originally came from, then perhaps you may get some cuts that the consumer can automatically see that it hasn't actually sold despite being made 10 years ago or cut 10 years ago, and therefore you may get the consumer know that they have you in a situation where you've had your money invested in that for some time and you need to get a return on it. You may find that
as
a... But from a retailer point of view, I actually quite like that.
That kind of helps you to get rid of something.
Because I was recently shopping for a new car. I won't go into the whole story, but I had to get one. And I went and saw a beautiful car, and it looked great. But it was at a really good price for a brand new car. And he said, well, it was registered 5 years ago, and we've not been able to sell it. That's why it's such a good price. And I thought about it. I thought, well, that's a really good price, but, you know, actually my wife didn't like it, so that was easy.
Yeah.
But I like the fact that it was traceable. I would hate to have thought that I bought something brand new and it wasn't traceable, right. and then found out that it was 5 years old.
And you could question the price as well. Like,
that's right.
Why are you selling it so cheap? Like,
yeah, exactly. And I'm sure if I'd offered him a really good price, if I'd wanted the car, you know, we probably could have done a deal. And I don't see that really as being a problem. But I can understand where you're coming from.
Yep. I guess I'm merely, you know, thinking through the possible eventualities. Do I have an opinion as to if it's a good thing or a bad thing at this point in time? Probably not.
Yeah, well, you've got the flip of it as well. You've got hot potatoes, you know. Quick, get it. It's just come on. It's going to go really quickly. Get it at this, you know, full retail price now.
I think Apple have shown... People want the latest iPhone, even though it's going to cost them a premium.
Yeah,
and they don't have there's an endless supply of people that want that. So I think, you know, just as there's people that shop for old things so they can get them cheaper.
So another thing to talk about is like any big stories from 2017. There was I did a Google before coming on quickly and found that there was a necklace featuring a 163.41 carat diamond, went for $33.7 million.
Yeah, that was me.
That was your design.
We've certainly seen very high prices at auction for large diamonds this year. I mean, it just continues. Every year, records are broken.
Sure.
So these big diamonds keep appearing. I suppose as the technology in mining improves, these bigger diamonds come to market, and there certainly doesn't seem to be any abating the prices.
So we think that the diamond market is quiet, but really flourishing.
I think there's different parts of the diamond market. There's different spectrums, and really, I think the vast majority of people that are buying those items. The super elite, the super wealthy, and often they are buying it as an investment because it's so rare. Dave just hit the nail on the head that it's improvements in mining technology that are causing these stones to come on the market now. That's why we are I think that's one of the reasons why we are seeing all these new records being set every year.
Yeah.
You know, when you think about it, mining of diamonds has traditionally been mostly alluvial. It's mining old riverbeds where they've been washed in the sediments from a river having eroded the original source. And nowadays, you're often finding places like Argyle's a slightly different. Let's use Argyle though as an example. Argyle, they are following. The volcanic pipe that the diamonds themselves originally formed in.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not chasing the secondary source where the diamonds have been eroded out of the rock where they were formed by the volcanic source and then have flowed down a river and settled on the riverbed somewhere.
Is that because it was more difficult, more dangerous?
Look, really, it's more in terms of actually geologists and miners getting more and more knowledge the nature of where diamonds come from. I mean, there still is conjecture about how they're actually formed. Now, some people may jump down my throat about that, but there still is a percentage of people say that they're actually formed by the actual volcanic eruption itself, and there's still large portions that say no, it was well and truly formed long before that, and it's merely that the volcanic eruption is actually taking the diamond itself out of the Earth's core or mantle or under the mantle and putting it up on top of the mantle. And if I used any incorrect terminology there, I'm not an actual geologist, but I'm sure that anybody with knowledge of geology would know what I'm getting at. So in the last 50 years or so, technology in terms of identifying sources of diamonds and then being able to dig deeper and deeper and follow the path more directly has certainly come on stream, which means that larger stones that may well have been lost previously or may well have been destroyed by blasting processes in mining and things like that are actually coming onto market.
So, and then we saw, what was it last week, Paris Hilton got...
She got something.
Well interjected. She got a 20-carat pair platinum diamond ring. Well done, her.
Yeah, yep.
Kim Kardashian, incidentally, has got a 15-carat cushion cut. So.
Only 15.
Right. So Paris has one-upped her, finally.
I think with Hollywood, there's definitely the one-upmanship.
I don't really see it.
Yeah, I don't really see it floating down into the, the general market, but there will be some people that aspire to have something similar.
I think, you know, in my experience, I've certainly had people coming in asking me, saying, you know, showing me a photo of, for instance, Kim Kardashian's ring and saying, "That's what I want." No problem. We can do something based along that those design cues. And what sort of budget did you have in mind, sir? Oh, I've got about $500. yeah, and that is there is certainly some trickle down. Whether or not it's all workable and achievable is another thing. Depends on perhaps on who that celebrity is and who the sort of people that are likely to admire them.
Yeah.
Well, we distinguish between rings, earrings, pendants. We call that jewelry. These people are wearing fashion labels. People aspire to those fashion labels because they're wearing them.
Yeah.
And jewellery is no different, really. Yep. Obviously, because of our field, we see jewellery as a completely different category. But I think for the majority of the population, it's just, it's all fashion. It's all...
Yeah.
You know, they don't really distinguish between the different industries.
And I think we have seen this before with, you know, Liz Taylor, Jackie Kennedy, Onassis. We have... Princess Diana is, I guess, the main major one.
Yeah.
You know, we have seen this before where there's been a very beloved celebrity has had a very famous piece of jewellery that has then started a trend.
But do you think that those people have got a little bit more awareness of jewellery?
Yes.
Like Elizabeth Taylor, Princess Diana. And Jackie Onassis. They're probably... actually appreciate the jewellery as opposed to want to just
perhaps, but then
bling themselves up to the
I think that's maybe an assumption.
Is it, you reckon?
I mean an assumption of the modern
true
celebrities.
Yeah, right. I'm just not down with the millennials. Yeah,
perhaps
maybe.
Then you get into social arguments.
Maybe in 50 years' time, we'll see Paris Hilton in the same way as we saw one of those others that you said.
Liz Taylor I mean, I think also if you're going to make that assumption, then you get into all sorts of arguments of, you know, old money versus new money or class wars and things like that. And it's really, while yes, I do have my own assumptions, are they actually based on anything? No. It's my own perspective. It's me viewing the world through my own life experience.
Yeah, right. It's like 80s, 90s music was better.
Of course it was.
In general. Talking about music, we do this thing sometimes when we ask you what you're listening to, Dave.
A little bit of insight. UK band called James. They've been around for about, since the late 80s.
David likes them so much that he named his firstborn after them.
Okay.
Yes.
I haven't heard of James. What's their big song?
Well, but back in 1988, Sit Down was their...
Oh, Sit Down?
Yep.
Oh, Sit Down.
That's the one.
That one.
You've heard of them. Yes.
Yeah.
But their latest stuff. I mean, they just keep reinventing themselves. Yeah. Every album's fantastic.
I think the one that you'd hear the most on the radio these days would be Laid. That is the title.
It was certainly the biggest here in Australia. Yeah. But but I encourage you to Google them and to listen to songs like Sometimes. Fantastic songs. Pity we can't play it. Can we play it?
No, I don't have the license, unfortunately, for music.
But yeah, I would certainly encourage it.
People maybe you could follow them. A few bars.
People
can download it themselves. Yeah.
People that follow James become, it almost surpasses all other music. You don't need anything else.
Sure.
Okay, you don't believe me?
Not even Tina Turner.
Well, yeah, Nat Bush.
Yeah. And
Lindsay, I'm sure that considering that we've just come past Christmas, that you would have done a whole lot of listening to Mariah Carey, knowing you.
I do love Mariah, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. She's a festive number one, isn't she?
She's quite popular around
probably
Christmas.
Just about followed by Bublé.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And is there anything else that you want to talk about? Anything that stood out for you, Dave, in 2017?
Well, without being controversial.
Ah, sure. Here we are. Yeah.
certainly the jewellery bodies.
Yeah. It's a hard thing
Australia.
To talk about.
It is, without, because I've been a member of the JAA, and yeah. I also support expertise as far as visiting the Sydney Trade Fair and things like that. So it just seems to me very petty. Seems at this stage in our industry, we need a bit of unity rather than all this infighting.
I think in terms of forward-facing comment, it should stick to the.
I think it's time for both sides to grow some, I think.
Yeah.
And to actually.
But you mean to grow some as in, grow some? Go.
But to actually step up and say, look, I think we're looking for a little bit of leadership and we don't want to see bickering. We don't want to see faction.
I think that perhaps some of that has been generated on social media by us, the members of the trade as well. So
yes, absolutely. It's time to simmer down a bit.
I'm dead tired of getting onto a trade Facebook page and seeing an argument about about those two groups and potentially even a publisher as well thrown in there.
And hopefully 2018 will be a year where we can all just simmer down on tone a little bit.
I think so. Certainly I wasn't trying to suggest any one side was right.
I think that the issue here is that we all need to make some compromises and get on with our business and support each other and stop with the mudslinging and he said, she said. It's gone on for long enough.
It was interesting that the weekend in August was actually worked out. It seemed like things were going to come to a head of some type, but both parties had a successful, the JAA had a successful awards, and the jewelers' fair was a good jewelers' fair.
I think so. I think there'll always be people who would like it to be better, but I think I think on reflection, I think it was probably a pretty good
feedback, isn't it?
Yeah. Look, I would say that I think at the time, I perhaps my opinion would have been that it was a little smaller and
size isn't important, Neil.
Well, that's what we'll look, whatever I say to this, Lindsay's going to edit it out. So, I certainly did have some opinions on it at the time. But at the end of the day, the important thing is that our industry is still healthy enough that we could actually have that fair held, that it was still economically viable to do so.
Yeah, right.
That there still was quite a reasonable turnout both from suppliers and from consumers.
Yeah.
And that's really, we need something to, we can't rely on any other method to get products out there to the notice of the retailers and the manufacturers, we need something centralized where once or twice a year there is something that, that people can go and show their wares, show their technology, and then the retailers, the manufacturers can go in there and inspect things. Certainly, I do know that there was a lot of people who were exhibiting at the fair who were carrying stock that was brought in specifically to show at the fair, which then went back overseas again afterwards. And it allows our suppliers an opportunity to show us things that they couldn't normally afford to keep in inventory, but can get here for you at a moment's notice. So it is a very important part of our trade.
And also a social event.
Absolutely. Well, I was drunk for 3 days.
One of the big winners, I think, really were the younger people in the trade, the designers. Yes. Two design competitions run by two different bodies.
Yeah.
Both to huge success.
Yep.
And some great designs talent. Came out of it. Some beautiful designs.
Yeah.
Which is really the future of the industry.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some really exciting young people in the industry at the moment.
And they couldn't be bothered about the politics. It's all about, promoting their work. And that's great. That's what it should be. Us old people should just get out of the way.
Who are you looking at when you say old, Dave?
Well, I say us together collectively. We're in that sort of similar age bracket.
Similar. 14 years, I think.
Really? That
12
much?
Or 14 years?
I think, time. Yeah, 12, 10.
And then don't even start looking at what the difference is between you and Lindsay,
So 2018.
Yes.
It's going to be fun.
I think it's already started like that. Yeah, it's been really busy at the shop, so I've been very happy, yes.
Good. Did you both have a good break over Christmas? Or
I did, yes.
Because you've got to force it upon yourself a little bit, I think.
Oh, it takes a few days to wind down. Yeah. I've found as I get older, Christmas is still as stressful as it ever was. In fact, anything, it's more stressful. So it usually takes me a few days just to settle down and get it back into a sleep pattern.
Predictions? Or just go out there, be positive, be happy?
I think definitely got to go out there positive. I think for myself, it's all going to be about marketing to the new normal.
Yeah.
To use that phrase again. And see where this trade's going to take me.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
After 35 years, I'm still learning.
Yeah, very much. It's a never-ending learning.
Until the ultimate.
Void.
I think, you're never going to succeed unless you have a positive outlook on things. So obviously don't go into the year being fearful and scared that it's yet another year. But I feel that every year that goes by, we're 1 year closer to things getting really good.
This time next year, Rodney.
Yes. And look, I think for me personally, I've made a couple of changes recently. I've gone back to my roots and gone back to focusing more on watches. I was a watchmaker before I became a jeweler, and so I've had that little change. I'm still doing jewelry, but just I've changed my focus. I've gone from sort of 80-20 one way to 80-20 the other way. And
I think that's true of a lot of people. They have like a few key skills that they kind of weave in between throughout the years.
And I think, I'm looking at it in terms of I'm looking forward to just having something different to do and to learning new things. There are certain parts of my professional career that have fallen by the wayside over time because of different things taking my focus. And I'm quite looking forward to some of the new challenges and learning experiences that are going to be coming up this year.
So, okay, well, how exciting. 2018, let's go forward. Positive, happy, encourage other people, encourage yourself. Thank you very much,
Dave,
for coming down. That was a great chat. Thanks, Neil.
Thanks, Lindsay.
See you next time. Good luck.
If you can afford me.